Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Press Row Podcast, and thank you to the great guys at Operation Sports for helping make it happen. This week we've got another two-part show. Up first, we've got a panel discussion with good friends Owen Good, Sumit Sarkar, Chris Sander, and TJ Larriman, all about the just-released NHL 16 information. More discussion about the NHL franchise as a whole, as opposed to the specifics, but we definitely touch on a lot of the aspects of the game and the information that's come out. And then, after that, we have a discussion with the newest creative director of the Madden franchise, Mr. Colby Landsbaugh. Now, he doesn't give us a whole lot yet about the modes or, you know, specific details about the game that we don't already know, but we do have an interesting conversation about sort of the approach that he is taking in his new role, and where the Madden franchise needs to go over the next few years. So it's a great two-part show. Thanks as always for listening. Enjoy. Well, all right, Owen Good is here, TJ Larriman is here, Chris Sander is here, and we are here to talk about NHL 16. Yes, this week some official news came out about NHL 16, which we'll talk about a little bit. But before we get into any of the details, you may recall from earlier conversations this year and late last year, some concern from various members of the panel, including myself, about the future of NHL and whether, you know, it could even possibly be that we would not see another NHL game. Well, that seems to have been answered very thoroughly and very definitively with the list of features that are coming out for NHL 16 this fall. So we'll start with you, Owen Good. What does it mean to you that NHL appears to be back and feeling very strong about what it's going to be offering to its customers this fall?
Well, I suppose that it's, you know, I suppose it's good news that NHL is, quote, adding back these features. I mean, I think this is sort of the thing that we feared would be the case, you know, that they, to back up here, obviously, NHL 15 had an extraordinarily disappointing launch for a lot of people because a lot of the modes that everyone had come to enjoy and expect in the game on the previous console generation were just simply not there on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One debut. And, you know, that pointed to, you know, rather than, I mean, it pointed to the creative decision to, I guess, get the structure of the game correct and put all of the effort there, or maybe that's all they had the time and resources to do. And then they left out a lot of these other things that people had come to expect, because they didn't want to, you know, to their credit, half-heartedly do them, but it also felt like half of a game. And so now, you know, with 2 years under the belt, they've had the time to and the wherewithal to put them in, except for connected GM, which I guess we'll get to in a moment. I mean, it's good that this stuff returns, but it's kind of bad to be right about this. That they are, you know, adding back features, and I don't think that they should get any credit for, you know, restoring these things. Seems to be the plan all along. When I say credit, any extra credit, I'm glad that they're there. But, you know, in the way that I intend to write about this, and I can't speak for anybody else, I'm going to be, you know, pretty neutral on that, and I don't think I'm going to say, wow, NHL is back. After this really cruddy launch, you know, hey, they're going to get back on their feet just because of this. I think it's kind of cynical, but I don't lay that at the feet of EA Canada, so to speak. You know, I think that they probably may get the least money for development out of any of the licensed games in Electronic Arts. And, you know, they certainly have, I believe, higher licensing costs than like FIFA, their brothers across the hall. made in the same studio. So, you know, this is definitely, you know, just a business decision that sort of forced them into this. And we've, you know, covered some of the inside baseball as to why they got in this position in the first place. So it's a management decision, not a studio decision for me, but I can't look at this and give the product like some great praise for, you know, coming back after an off year, you know, like it's Kentucky back in the NCAA basketball playoff. So
TJ Lowerman, will the reintroduction of many of the features restore the goodwill that the NHL franchise had in many cases enjoyed for years? Or will enough of the fans who stayed away from the game this year sort of retain that, you know, animosity or negativity towards the franchise after, you know, let's face it, when it launched last year, the PR team or whoever was in charge waited until almost the last minute before the game shipped, before the feature set got released. Meanwhile, now here it is, what, 4 or 5 months, maybe 3 or 4 months anyway, before release, and we get the full feature set now. I mean, can that goodwill come back? And TJ Lowerman, you're one of those guys who didn't buy it last year after years. So, are you back on the NHL train? Has they restored some of that goodwill for you? And do you think for the larger market?
I'm still not sold 100%. You were saying how they were releasing information so late last year that we had to follow a Operation Sports post talking about this is all the stuff that's still missing, and they didn't say anything about it. So that was a really fun time last year. But we always see in video games the problems of 1 year might not pay off that much, or we might not see the results of a problem of 1 year until the next year. So I think even with bringing back a lot of the features and modes that were there last year, or that weren't there last year, I think we're still going to see a big hit to sales and not come back to where it was 2-3 years ago. But they've brought enough back that I'm interested in picking it up again this year. I'm very interested to see how they do this whole reimagined EASHL, which was one of my two favorite modes to play in NHL 13 or whatever last year I bought it was. But still not having GM Connected, I think that's going to be something big for a lot of the core gamers, especially people like us, where that might be their only thing that we're going to go in and play. So that still like hurts a lot that's not there. And that seems like that's starting the trend of online franchise isn't something that really matters to these companies, even though it's something that really matters to its players. So I hope that's something that's maybe they'll say, you know what, next year we'll put that out. They're not obviously not going to say that till next year, but I think they've won back a lot of people with the stuff that they've announced so far. I just don't think they're going to get everybody back this year, maybe next year or the year after that.
Chris Sanner, the news came out. All the feature lists, came out a little early. Some leaks, got posted on Operation Sports, and then the official list came out. What was the reaction to the Operation Sports community to getting a clear picture as to what will be in the game this fall for hockey players?
Well, you know, the initial reaction was it's that usual mix after a. I mean, I guess it just seems like things kind of go in ebbs and flows. And when it comes to our community, after a release like NHL 15, which was disappointing in every way, there's just a hair of skepticism. Just a hair, Rich. I'm sure you've seen it before on OS. So, there is a little bit of skepticism. There's some excitement. There's some disappointment with the lack of player editing. There's a lot of things a lot of questions people are still asking about. Is this in the game? Is this not in the game? But the return of EASHL, be a GM or crap, whatever the mode's called. Don't even have the list in front of me, but anyways, the franchise mode in NHL, seeing it getting some attention and such, those are all good things. But really, and I agree with TJ, I'm really worried that just from the reaction that OSers have given, it doesn't seem to be that overwhelmingly positive. It's more like a skeptical wait and see kind of approach for a lot of people. And these are people who have been very enthusiastic about this game on the forum. So it'll be interesting to see if that follows through with, you know, a big drop off in sales this year, especially amongst the casual crowd. But yeah, there's people that are really skeptical about this game this year, and they have every right to be. But I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the merits of what actually was released, but it didn't seem to be all that terrible.
Oh, and good. I want to pose a question to you. It's obvious now that the NHL, you know, EA's NHL franchise has been rebuilt. And that moving to a much more powerful console that also requires much more, you know, manpower to create games for it that harness that power, you know, it's a difficult task. My question to you is, and you know, I don't want to keep harping on NHL 15, but my question to you is, why couldn't Electronic Arts have said a few months before the release of NHL 15, look, guys, we are rebuilding this from the ground up, and it's going to be a process of multiple years for us to do everything that we want to do. And the first year's game is going to have a lot of cool core stuff, but the next year's is going to have more and more. Why couldn't the expectations have been set that way, as opposed to, okay, well, you don't even know what's in the game until the day before it releases, and then now it's a few months before it. Like, why? What is it crazy to suggest that they could have had that sort of approach to how they publicized the game versus the path that they've chosen? Could that have? It just, you know, setting expectations to me is always a good way to sort of do things. And I don't know, is it crazy to think that they could have done it differently, or did they, in your opinion, have no choice but to go about it the way they did?
Well, I mean, after writing about the subject now for about 7 years, I'm pretty cynical about a lot of it. And I think that these are, you know, the development arm and the publicity arm, you got to understand, I'm sure you understand, are two completely different things. They didn't do it because it's simple. They had a game to sell. And they have a guaranteed minimum of however many million dollars, I don't know, you know, to the National Hockey League and its Players Association. And if they tell people what you're getting this year is not going to be as good as what you're getting next year, you're telling people not to buy the game this year. I guess they just decided they'd roll the dice with disappointing people, even though they pre-ordered it or really wanted it this year, rather than giving them a warning, you know, to not get it this year. And stay off it until next year, or worse. Well, not necessarily worse. I mean, I guess they'd still, I don't know what their agreement was with the league regarding how Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 sales figured into the formula here. Excuse me. I'm sorry about that. I'm not sure how that figures into the formula. I mean, you know, NHL 15 on the previous generation consoles, were the ones that were more fully featured, and although they were the dreaded roster update in every other form. And that's what this NHL legacy thing is coming out, which I guess we'll talk about in a second. But the answer to your question is, I mean, yeah, it is kind of, I don't want to pick on you, but you know, this is a publicly traded company. The NHL is a, you know, multi-million dollar sports operation in North America. There's millions of dollars is going to change hands here no matter what. EA didn't want to harm its sales position any more than it had to, even though it realized what it was going to be putting out, and the consumer suffered for that.
TJ, would you have preferred a different approach to this? Do you think that would have reduced some of the hard feelings that still seem to remain?
Yeah, I don't think there's much they really could have done, because if they would have come out and said, hey, we have this game out on 360 and PS3, it's the same thing you got last year with the roster update and a little bit more, and then we're gutting the next generation game, but it'll be better next year, but you're still going to pay $60. I think that message probably would not have flown
well. I'm certainly not saying that I'm not suggesting that they should have stood up and said, hey guys, we're gutting the game. and you're getting something that's worth $20. There are positive ways to be honest about your approach that deliver a concept of value now and a concept of value in the future. I personally, like, let's just say, you know, let's say Joe Montana football gets announced at E3 and they say, you know what? We have big dreams for this game, but we want you to play it now. So the first game is going to have these three or four, you know, core ways to play it. And then over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to make it bigger and bolder. It's going to be fun the whole time, but we are, you know, this is a multi-year plan. Like, there are ways.
But Rich, you're talking about a game that's, you're talking about a game that's starting from nothing. You know, NHL, we're talking about a game that lost features. Right. And there's really no good way to put, you know, a fried egg and bacon happy face on that. I mean,
that's true.
You know, it's, I mean, I get what you're saying. And I think that there, but I think there's a lot of in this business, you know, of people, and I suppose it's because you have, you know, video games that have, quote, community management. And so, you know, people sort of think that developers are their friends, people who make the games are their friends, people who publish the games are their friends, and that people deal with them like they're their friends, and that friends would be obligated to tell each other, hey, you know, we had a real tough year, and this is what's going on. And the bottom line is they got soap to sell. And that's, you know, exactly why people didn't find out until the end. I mean, you know, it's on them. And they don't really, that's why I say they don't deserve any extra credit for bringing this stuff back. I mean, I'm happy to see it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to kill the game just because,
right,
you know, of that. But, you know, this is, for me, it's like, you know, you guys are just a year late.
Yeah.
One of their big selling points on all the sports games as they came over from last generation to this generation was everything's going to parody everything. And then this game came out and,
yeah,
had no parody.
Yeah, I mean, this thing broke the rule they said they'd never violate again after the Madden disaster on Xbox 360. You know.
And that's why I think it comes down to, I believe, you know, I firmly believe that in 2015 especially, right? I mean, I think it's always been true, but especially nowadays, if you show respect for your audience, the audience will then have more respect for you. And to me, it was disrespectful to their fans how the information came out about NHL 15. And I just feel that had there been more respect shown to the core, that a lot of the reception would have been dramatically different. Chris Sanner, do you agree with that or do you disagree with that?
I agree with you really up to about the 80% point in that point there, Rich. The big thing is with communication these days, especially with talking with social media and such, you really can't do PR this old ways where you kind of hide stuff. And then at the 11th hour, you're like, oh, by the way, this game's not complete. Sorry, guys.
Right.
Because that really doesn't work. And they saw that last year. But the big thing is, too, is that they have to figure out a message that they are going to convey with this game and hope that people, you know, buy into it. I don't know if saying, you know, being completely straight up and honest and saying, yeah, this game's half a game, but you're still paying $60 for it, I don't think that would have worked. But something in the middle there where, hey, we're working toward a future and here's where we're going and here's what you're getting this year.
By the way, what you're getting this year is still good.
Yeah.
I mean, again, exactly. I'm not suggesting they say, oh, yeah, so good.
Yeah.
It's still good, exactly. But it's the start. I mean,
The problem is, just with the feature parity promise that EA had and such, that looked really bad. People don't forget that stuff. But what they needed to do is they needed to basically say, this game, what we're offering you this year is the core NHL experience. It's got all this. It's got great gameplay. You know, however you're going to do it as a PR person, you know, this has got great gameplay. You've got this mode. You've got, you know, we're going to bring these modes into the game later. You don't just, I mean, it seemed like they were flying by the seat of their pants saying, well, we're going to add this stuff. No, have all that prepared in ahead of time and then say next year we're adding these things in. And, you know, there's so many different ways you could do it as a business communication-wise. We could talk about that for hours. But
yeah,
the simple fact is if you just hide it and hide it and hide it in that 11th hour, bring it out, that just doesn't work these days. It just does not work.
Yeah, but, I mean, come on. Let's think about what our conversation would have been last year if they had, you know, around this time, you know, said this is what our plan of attack is for NHL 15. we've had to nail the next. We've implemented a completely new presentation. We have puck physics designed by the guy who worked on a Large Hadron Collider. You know, all the virtues that they have done to make this thing a next generation game. However, because of the, you know, the development time and cost, we haven't, you know, we've had to leave out all of these modes. I mean, you know what we would say. You know, we would kill it for failing the promise of feature parity. You know that we would say they probably intend to add these modes back and, you know, and sell those as new features. You know that we would talk about our disappointment more than our enthusiasm for the improvements to the core modes. I mean, you know, and our audience is the core, you know, the people who, you know, are I guess, you know, they're gonna buy the game every year, you know, no matter what. But they're also the ones that are going to be most easily scared off, you know, as opposed to, I guess, more casual users who may not read this stuff. I mean, EA quite calculatedly rolled the dice to say, we will gain more by trying to win these people back after a year of disappointment next year, you know, than we will if we just go ahead and tell them take a year off. But I mean, you know, to think about what you, when it's easy to sit here and go, they needed to be more honest with us, needed to be more transparent with us, they needed to be, you know, more like a friend to us, when we know exactly what we'd be talking about last year if we were told what NHL 15 was going to be like, you know, 2 months in advance.
Yes, but we wouldn't be also criticizing their hiding of things, and we wouldn't. I think. And I'm not going to harp on this anymore. I just feel that a lot of the negative will towards the game would not have been there had they been more transparent. I think people are a lot cooler if they're presented information clearly and accurately, you know, beforehand, as opposed to finding out very unfortunate information at the last minute. But that's neither here nor there. Well, actually, that's not true. It is here and there. But Sumit Sarkar has joined us for a few moments. Sumit, you've seen the features list of NHL 16. What stands out to you as something that you are, you know, most interested in or perhaps most surprised about?
Well, for one thing, I'm really curious to see what this new EA Sports Hockey League is about. You know, it was a pretty big mode that people loved, and they didn't have it on the current gen consoles last year, and you know, they're saying that the reason for that was that, you know, they wanted to really overhaul it and change the things, so they've gotten rid of the, you know, progression this year, and now it's you know, going to be like it's class based or something, it sounds like. So you know, really curious to see what shape that takes, especially because it is such a huge thing for this sort of diehard player community. When you look at the entire feature list, it's got, pretty much got, you know, everything that they stripped out for 15, and that's encouraging. You know, and what's also encouraging is, and I'm sure you guys have touched on this already, that the transparency, and that's what sort of stood out to me about their reveal, because, you know, pretty much every sports game ever, in terms of the simulation annual franchises, you know, the 6 months out or whatever, they give you a sort of brief, vague overview of what's coming. You know, like for Madden, what do we know at this point? I mean, only what's been sort of leaked in like GameStop listing and whatnot, and things like that, like Battle for Air Supremacy or whatever. And that's usually what it's like for all the games, right? But here, it's clear to me that you know, EA knows they screwed up last year, and they're doing their best, I think, to sort of regain the goodwill from players or from their community by putting out a detailed, long list from the get-go.
TJ Lowerman, EA SHL, online team play, what's the difference?
EA SHL is where you're using your, like your Be a Pro Star. Online team play, you're using the actual players in the NHL.
Oh, got it. That makes sense. So yeah. What's more appealing to you?
More appealing to me is the EA SHL, just because I couldn't name one hockey player past Bro V-Sky. Brodeur's retired, right?
Yeah. Yes, so he is. He
I know a hockey player. There you I go. Think that Ovechkin guy's still around. But yeah, I like the creating my own guy, taking him out on the ice, and playing like that. That's how I played a lot of FIFA the past few years with the – it's essentially FIFA Pro Clubs, but for hockey, as opposed to right. just the online team play that's in FIFA too. But yeah, I like taking my guy, building him up, and making him cool, and crushing guys as like a left defender.
Online couch co-op to me sounds pretty interesting, and I believe this is new, not just new like returning, but I believe this is new just completely. Chrisanna, do I have that right? And what do the OS community have to say about that? It seems to me like I read quite a few opinions about that particular mode.
Yeah, you know, the OS community is pretty excited about that. You know, some people are, I guess they're old school like me in the sense that you like to play games with people in the house with you. You know, you like to have your buddy come over, you both grab a controller, you play. And to be able to do that online, it seems to be something we take for granted, but it's something, you know, you don't get in some titles. And it's nice, it's one of those nice bonuses in NHL. I got a feeling it's not going to be a hugely used feature. Only a couple people have commented about it on OS, but they were all positive. No one said, oh my gosh, why'd they add this? But you know, the comments were positive about that mode, just there weren't that many.
So, you know, we'll kind of go over the list here. So, you know, we've talked quite a bit about it, but there are a bunch of ways that you can play NHL 16. You've got the new EA Sports Hockey League, which we talked about a little bit, the new 6-on-6, or not new, but 6-on-6 online team play, online couch co-op. But then you've got Be a GM, which is back and has some new wrinkles to it, including player morale. We'll talk about that in a second. You've got Be a Pro coming back with some additions to it as well. You've got Hockey Ultimate Team. There's some on-ice training, which I think is going to be well received. One of the things that we've heard from folks is that, you know, the Madden sort of gauntlet training and the different ways that it sort of teaches you about the game, the real football game as well as playing Madden, was a good addition. And it seems like the NHL team is putting some of that in. And then you've got, you know, sort of the marketing items around precision skating and seamless puck pickups, unrivaled game day authenticity. You know, once you start using words like that, I start to tune out a little bit. But, you know, clearly there's a lot of different ways to play and a lot of different modifications that they're making in the game. So I want to take a step back. TJ Lyerman, even though GM Connected is not in, we'll talk about that in a minute, the Be a GM player morale, it seems as if when they're talking about that, they're mentioning that every player has a different personality, you'll have to deal with trade demands, relationships with teammates. I mean, NHL has for years been a lot of fun, but for years has also been a very dry experience, as are, you know, most sports simulations as far as player personality. Do you think that this is actually going to be something that will materially influence it, or you know, what's your initial thought hearing about the player morale related to the Be a GM mode in particular?
So this is how they handle each other off the field and not like how FIFA handles it, like on the field, where guys like each other so they play better together. This is completely not like that. It's a question.
I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously all they've said is a couple of sentences about it. What I get a little concerned about is that it becomes like the Ultimate Team where you have to, you know, you have to get green lines between guys for them to play well. And I don't know. I mean, if implemented well, it could be something that could be sort of easy to spot and fun. But I worry about, you know, kind of like confidence in Madden. It's just sometimes these things get overdone, and I worry about something like that happening and Be a GM.
Right. Yeah. I would hope that's like how FIFA had it, where when you start making passes to the same guys to each other, they feel more comfortable with each other and they start playing better, like have good momentum as a team. That would be something that is really cool, especially if they had the expressions and stuff that we got in FIFA last year, where guys were clapping for each other or getting mad and throwing stuff on the ground that didn't actually exist. But yeah, that's cool. As long as it feels realistic and not just canned animations or guys get angry at guys for no reason. But it would be fun if they put like really stupid excuses in there, like Jim parked in my spot and now I'm angry and I don't want to be on the same line as him. So make a move or trade this guy. That'd be cool.
Boy, this is something that I do not. I don't know. As soon as I read this, I get a little ticked off. Right? It says Hockey Ultimate Team single player seasons. The most played mode in the NHL series gets even better.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe for a moment that Hockey Ultimate Team is the most played mode in NHL. I don't.
Well,
believe
Rich, when there's only one mode in the game, then it's going to be the most played.
After they gutted the thing last year, I mean, you know, I wanted to point this out. I forgot to. I mean, the one thing that they sure as hell didn't get rid of and made sure it was fully supported was Hockey Ultimate Team because of the extra revenue that contributes. I mean, you know, but I mean, everybody here, you know, has covered in Electronic Arts, you know, call to investors where, you know, they tout if they can't tout sales figures, they tout, you know, how many players they have as if
yes.
like that actually frankly means anything. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that that's a marketing line in here. And, you know, if the claim is true, you know, or not, I don't really think it makes a difference, as you point out.
Well, yeah, I mean, the claim being true depends upon whatever sort of data that you are looking at and manipulating to say that it's true. I mean, to me, this is just it's an unnecessary line to say that it's the most played mode in the NHL. To me, it's just something that feels like, yep, by the way, this is why, you know, we keep investing in Ultimate Team. It's the most played mode. I mean, I don't know. It feels completely disingenuous, and it just aggravates me. Not that I'm not Ultimate Team, just the way that they continue to sort of push Ultimate Team. People who play Ultimate Team are going to play Ultimate Team and have a great time. But I don't know. There's no way that it is the most played mode. Right, Christian? I mean, just by accident, people would play, you know, Quick Game or just a regular, you know, pickup game more than they would get into Ultimate Team and start actually playing it. Am I right?
Well, Rich, it just depends on from what point of view you're approaching it from. I mean, no, I'm kidding. No, there's no way. Ultimate Team is, there's no way it's the most played mode in NHL. I mean, if it is, then Ultimate Team has decidedly taken over sports gaming in such a way that any other drug could never do. Seriously.
If I could interject here, maybe they're taking it from the standpoint of people who have tried it at least once. So it's not like a consistent user.
Yeah.
It's just a whole number thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you guys were talking about they probably have shifted numbers. I mean, just like, well, yeah, you're. I mean, just like we had this many people do one session of Ultimate Team. And honestly, it's probably because you're offered something in the game and you push OK and, oh, they played Ultimate Team. It's the most played mode in the game.
Right.
You know, and plus, if they just have any point of data that could back that up, obviously they're doing that because they want people to play Ultimate Team. Oh, there's more there's people playing Ultimate Team. I want to be a part of this. Let's go be a part of this. So, you know, whether that works or not, you know, that's up in the air. But that's obviously just an attempt to try to get more people interested in playing it, because the more people playing the mode, obviously, the more appealing it is to someone who might be on the fence. So. But, yeah, it's whatever. I mean, there's no way it's actually the most played mode. The most games played in NHL are not in Ultimate Team.
Of course not. And again, I have no problem with Ultimate Team. I'm glad Ultimate Team exists. I'm glad that it helps these games thrive. So it's not an anti-Ultimate thing. It's just, you know, again, it's for all of the, you know, for all of the appearances that the team is trying to get out in front of the game this year as far as communication. It's little things like that that sort of irked me, especially when, and I'll talk about it here just for a minute, you know, the reason cited for no GM Connected is that it was the least played. And the reason that GM Connected was the least played mode is because it was far too complex. Most people who want to play with their friends online do not want to have to go through drafts of, you know, and free agency and all sorts of crazy roster management and things like that. They just want to play some games with their friends and have the stats get tracked.
You don't and the need millions GM. Of hours of loading screens were oh, tons well, of fun too.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need a hyper complex online mode in a franchise or a season mode. All you need is the ability, like they've got playoff mode, right? They've got a playoff mode. all you got to do is be able to play playoff mode with a couple of your buddies too. Like, that would be great. How much fun would it be to play for the Press Row Stanley Cup and just get into a playoff mode with us? That would be great. Or a single season mode where we'll just keep track of the games, and maybe it's a 20 game season or a 40 game. You don't need to have all of this crazy stuff. I remember, TJ, we've talked about it before, when we had our GM connected, Scott Binns had to go through and like write a 4-page email to explain how we go through the off season. And we were hockey fans, for crying out loud. I mean, the reason it was the least played mode is because it was far too complex. They don't need to bring back GM Connected, but it would be great. These are online machines that are supposed to, you know, be about social connection with your friends. Give us the ability just to do simple online modes that are not just Ultimate Team. Owen Good, am I nuts or what?
You're not nuts. I mean, it's always very easy to couch this, you know, the counter argument in terms of, you know, well, you know, obviously online modes, you know, require support. They were, you know, when you change the code base at all in a sports video game, you inevitably affect, you know, other things, even if you don't intend to. You know, it's not just, you know, operating on discrete parts, you know, that kind of thing. You can create any number of excuses for it. But you're right. I mean, I think it is a legitimate base expectation of a, you know, fan buying a, you know, simulation sports video game and what people come to expect of them. I mean, we don't expect online career modes and RBI baseball, because that's a completely different game. I think just to put a little bit of a counterweight on it though, I mean, you know, when you sign up for these online modes, it's not just a one-year thing. As the NBA 2K series found out quite painfully last month, you know, they pulled the plug on NBA 2K14. And now some of that has to do with just some, frankly, I think, boneheaded design choices for how they did their offline career modes. But nonetheless, they were content to pull online features after 16 months. And people justifiably got angry about that, and now they've come back and said, okay, well, we commit to, you know, 27 months of online support for that. So when you do an online mode, it's not just that, you know, you're doing it for this year, and then once that's over, you move on to the next year and how you're going to support it there. I mean, you've got to keep, you know, resources going for what is, you know, basically legacy or old architecture, you know, for a couple of years. And to Electronic Arts' credit, they have kept these things going for far longer than their direct competitors, you know, at 2K Sports and MLB The Show. I think, what is it, FIFA 11 is still supported online or something right now? I mean, it goes back something like 5 years for some of their big sellers. I don't know how far NHL goes back, but it goes back more than two editions. So that's what you sign up for, and I don't think a lot of people do get that. And I think that if you were to look at it, you know, NHL is probably the franchise that gets the least money when it comes time to divide up the budgets at Canada and Tiburon, even though it's got, you know, it's a four-star product, had this great reputation, has the NHL branding, is effectively an NHL product. There's no way it gets FIFA money. There's no way it gets Madden money. I don't even think it gets NBA money, to tell the truth. Because, you know, it's something that is extremely popular in Canada, and it's something that's popular with a segment of Americans that, you know, usually are on the coasts and in the north. So, you know, that's the calculus that goes on here. It's the only thing I can say.
Submits our car, you know, as we've talked about quite a bit, EA has definitely gotten in front of the game this year with their messaging. Part of that has been some of the community questions. What's your impressions been so far of how EA has handled that in relation to NHL 16?
Yeah, that's part of their publicity campaign. You know, to again get back in the good graces of their fan base, you know, you can be cynical and see that as them, you know, just trying to do good PR. But I think it goes beyond that. I mean, sure, there is the initial, you know, reasoning. You know, this is likely driven by the huge criticism they received with NHL 15 on the current gen consoles last year, both from critics and from fans. And so, you know, it's encouraging to see them come out not just with the full feature list, but also with these community questions, and they want to, you know, engage the community. Even their blog post mentioned that, you know, they brought in fans, and that's obviously something that a lot of games, a lot of sports developers do, you know, that they really wanted to engage with the community. But I think, you know, even what's more indicative to me of this being, you know, not just a sort of PR move is that they're actually, you know, they're not taking garbage questions. I mean, they're answering like the softballs, but they're also, you know, acknowledging, you know, real issues in the past, and they're being pretty forthright. I think, you know, more so than you would usually see from a, you know, a franchise developed by a, you know, a big budget, you know, AAA franchise, whatever it might be, you know, Call of Duty or Madden or anything like that. You know, Rich, you brought up GM Connected earlier, and you know, I think they gave a pretty frank answer, as disappointing as it might be. Associate producer Andy Agostini said it was, you know, a highly requested feature that unfortunately wasn't as successful as we'd hoped.
No, I believe he said actually, but he used the word failure. I think if I
yeah. Well, so you know, it's funny that I wrote the story a couple of days ago or yesterday, and they've changed the wording, because the original wording, which I have in my story on Polygon, is a highly requested feature that unfortunately failed in many ways.
Right. So then that's where I read it, was from your piece, because I was, and that's what sort of drove my rant earlier. It failed because it was way more complex than 99% of anybody playing the game would ever want to try to do.
Yeah. And even, you know, acknowledging that or even in, you know, however they want to sort of put a spin on that, you know, Agostini does say, you know, we understand that there were some issues with the overall speed of the mode, which is an understatement, certainly.
Very, very Canadian, you know, way to answer that. understated.
But, yeah, but you know, I thought that was pretty candid there, at least in terms of the way that they were answering that question. You know, they're talking about. And you know, they're answering. I think a lot of times you see developers, when they do these kinds of things, you know, they only answer the questions that they can say yes to, or you know, they only answer questions in a way that, or they only answer questions if the answer will allow them to promote a new feature in this year's game or something. But that's not what they're doing with the community questions this year for NHL. So that's what I thought was particularly encouraging about the strategy, not just that they're doing it, but the way that they're going about it.
You know, another one of the bullet points is superstar authenticity, you know, enhanced facial features, new equipment details that are synonymous with the league's top player, adds another layer of player authenticity. I've said this for a long time. I think NHL has by far the most difficult challenge in representing individual players. You know, the NBA, because the players have no masks, no helmets, no, you know, real, you know, equipment other than their uniforms on, and the game itself lends, you know, there's a lot of individual traits that a point guard has that's different than a power forward or center or so on. You know, Madden, with, you know, even the different quarterbacks and running backs, you know, the way that they throw and move, you know, there's a lot of individual personality in there. You know, MLB The Show, obviously, with the way the pitchers pitch and the batters bat. But NHL, it's extremely difficult to tell the difference between any player at any time. Like, yes, Zdeno Chara, who's like, what, a 9'4" defenseman, you can sort of see him and pick him out because he's so big and lumbers across the ice. But I'm telling you, there is very little room for significant individuality in the NHL. The game moves so quickly. The players all look virtually the same. Chris Sanner, what if anything can be done about that? And as these new generation, you know, as the PS4 and Xbox One, you know, continues to allow other sports to really have individual behaviors flourish, Is that going to be an even bigger challenge for NHL because that is so difficult to do?
Well, I think they're trying to address it with the commentary and, you know, going with the story-based thing. Guys do have some unique look in hockey. I mean, I'm not a hockey expert by any means, but, you know, guys do look different and such on the ice a little bit. But I think the big thing and what NHL would be wise to do is focus on the storylines and such, you know, try to focus on the immersive experience around that instead of focusing on the individual styles because, yeah, you know, you have, unique home run swings in MLB The Show, you know, and basketball, you know, it's very much a personalized thing.
Sure,
absolutely. I mean, in Madden, you have, you know, different quarterbacks who throw differently, running backs who run. I think hockey, it would be wise for them to just try to focus on making the NHL atmosphere and making the commentary, you know, doing all that to the point where it is so immersive that all those other things kind of fade away. I think that's really the thing sports games are missing anyway. It's kind of like that beginning sequence in Madden last year where it's felt like a movie almost, you know, very cinematic and all that. Those are things that sports games really haven't touched on very well, and NHL would be wise to maybe try that. I don't know.
Submit your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, Chris did a great job of describing it, you know, even though you may not be a huge hockey fan. It is true to a certain extent that, you know, there's it's difficult for a developer of game to sort of recreate the differentiation between players. I mean, certainly, you know, if you watch the sport of hockey, right, like there is a huge disparity in talent between your Sidney Crosbys and your Dan Boyles, right? But that kind of thing is hard to represent in a game because it's not so much about visual distinctions between skating styles or
yes, exactly.
Things like that, right?
I mean, Alexander Ovechkin is probably one of the most unique looking players in the real NHL, and I cannot. I mean, even someone like him, it's almost impossible to tell when he's got the puck in NHL because it's just so hard to translate that to a video game.
You can tell because he's got the neon yellow shoelaces on his skates, but no, it's true. I mean, Ovechkin is one of those guys where you can tell if you're watching the sport because, you know, he just has such a way of moving. You know, he just his skates on the ice. You know, he just is just like a bull when he's got a head of steam. Just really impressive the way he moves around the ice, and you can tell, you know, he's a real force of nature on the ice. But you know, it's less about specific visual styles like it is in say baseball, and more about the way that certain players, the best of the best, impose their will on a game. Ovechkin is that kind of player. You know, even lesser players like you look. Chris Kreider, the Rangers, is a guy who's a big, very physical power forward, but also, you know, has a lot of you know, skill. Can be a finesse player, and you know, he's known for really going hard to the net and crashing into goalies sometimes. And those are the kinds of things where it's more of a behavioral thing than a sort of visual tick or you know, identifiable. Style, and that's what makes it harder to implement. And if it's something like a skill move, you know, like you can say, oh, Pavel Datsyuk was always known for his, you know, fancy dekes and things like that, you know, that's even harder to do because, like, what do you do then? Is it like, oh, if you are playing as one of these 20 star players, you press the L1 button and it does his patented move? Like, you know, that's not really fun for people who don't want to control one of those players, and it's not really very realistic because then you had to balance, you know, when does that move fail or you know, versus when do they pull it off. So it's a much tougher thing to do. Similarly tough in FIFA in terms of, you know, I'm sure soccer fans know what you know, Benzema looks like or Messi on the pitch, but you know, kind of harder to make that distinctive look translate to a
video. Yeah, but at least in FIFA you can make them look, because in FIFA they're not wearing helmets, they're not wearing shoulder pads and knee pads. So in FIFA I can even though I'm not that big of an international soccer fan, I do like to watch it and watch quite a bit of Premier League now. I can tell when I'm playing as Everton. I can tell if it's Leighton Baines who's got it, because he looks very different than Morales or something like that. But yeah, your point is valid.
The thing is that for me, in terms of a video game, authenticity to specific players goes beyond looks. I mean, yes, you can do 3D head scans like NBA Live did of however many players, but that's a very different thing, having the visual identification of looking at someone and saying, oh, that's Wayne Gretzky or whatever, versus, actually distinguishing them somehow, in the way that they play the sport, right? Like, yes, in terms of, you know when Marshawn Lynch stiff-arms somebody.
That's right.
But, it's harder to make that sort of transition to a video game for something like that.
Yep, much more difficult. All right, so let's wrap this segment up. Just go around the table real quick. Owen Good, let's assume for a minute that NHL 16 delivers a quality on ice game with the modes, in a working enough fashion, right? Every game ships with issues, but let's assume that the on-ice play, on-ice quality is good, and that the modes presented here are delivered in totality the way that they should be. Will that be enough to put an end to the bad feelings of last year's game, and will the franchise be able to move forward in a positive way?
I think it'll put an end to the bad feelings, but I don't think that's necessarily going to translate to enthusiasm. Either from the community or from the press, for this. I think, again, it's what we said at the beginning of this. We're glad that they're back, but we don't really think that they deserve extra credit for it. And the marketing of this stuff that is added back is going to be judged kind of with a jaundiced eye. I don't think NHL. I think, frankly, despite the fact that everything online is preserved online for decades and it's in print, it's all of the immediacy and mishap of being in broadcast communications combined with the archival nature of a print. I still think people have short memories. And that a lot of the disappointment over what happened last year will fade. And I think, frankly, some of that has to do with the size of the constituency as well. If Madden or NBA had done something like this, it'd still be a bigger stink because those truly are flagship products for the genre. I know that everybody hates to go, well, it's a mixed bag. that's kind of a dodge. And I don't mean to do that. But I think that they will recover from this. I think what they really have to worry about, I said that last year, they decided to roll the dice and not tell the community, about this gimped version because they didn't want to, jack sales on that any more than they had to. And they figured they'd just make it back up this year. I think what they really have to worry about is making up their Metacritic score, if that matters to that studio. Because I don't know that writers are going to be, as inclined to go, okay, NHL is back, here's an 85. I think if they just do what's expected and bring back the things that were enjoyed, on the last generation, that's a 75, a 70. All this other stuff and how it differentiates itself there will be really important.
TJ Lyman, same question to you.
Yeah, I agree with Owen. The series has a lot to do to still come back to where it used to be, because last generation, quite frankly, it was the best sports video game franchise, arguably. From 09 to 13 were some of the best sports games of that generation. But from what I've seen so far, I like what I've heard, and as someone who made the conscious effort to not buy last year's game, we're on the right path. to getting me to purchase this game. There's a pretty good chance that I will, because most of the stuff that I like to play is back in this game, and I'm looking forward to see what else they have to say before this comes out. But so far, it looks like we're on the right path.
Sumitsar Kaur, same question to you.
Well, you know, I certainly agree with what Owen and TJ have said in terms of, you know, are the critics and players going to applaud them for bringing this stuff back in a year after it was missing? Not necessarily. That's why I think it is important for them to come out this early, hat in hand, and you know, admit the missteps and say that they're working with the community and you know they're going to have all this stuff. At the same time, a lot of the comments that I've seen around this initial announcement are, well, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right. So you look at what they did last year, and again, this is what I was talking about with the goodwill issue, where a lot of people are looking at this and saying, well, you know, it sounds good, but I'm going to wait until launch day and maybe afterward to put down my $60 because you burn me. And that's the risk that you take when you roll the dice, as Owen said, like that. And the thing is that, you know, I certainly don't envy EA Canada on this game because it's a real tough task, and you see this with any sports franchise that does something like take a year off. It's really, really hard to get back in the saddle when you have that annual grind because, you know, this year it's simply not going to be enough for them to add in the stuff that was missing at launch last year. That was the biggest issue with NHL 15, but even the stuff that was there, the modes that were there were scaled back. Be a GM, for example, didn't have a fantasy draft. That's going to be there, right? But in 16, but I think that, you know, we really don't know what these modes are going to look like in terms of their feature set. We know they're going to be there, but you know, what does that mean exactly? And I think certainly gamers have a right to be skeptical at this point. And, you know, from now, really all the way up until launch in September. That's the tough thing, because not only does EA Canada have to bring back what they didn't have last year, but, you know, they've got to go above and beyond. They've got to innovate. They've got to improve what was there before. I haven't said it yet, but as I said in my review, there was a lot to like about NHL 15, especially the on-the-ice stuff. You know, I thought it played pretty well. The physics stuff was great, and the presentation was terrific. A huge step forward, and they're upgrading that as well this year. So they certainly have their work cut out for them, and just in building the game, but also in sort of clawing their way back in the hearts of the critics and fans.
So we'll close it with you, Chris Sanner. Let's same question. Assuming that the on-ice gameplay is good, solid, there will always be debate and issues with parts of it, but let's assume they put a good on-ice product and the features and modes that were described this week are delivered in full, not, you know, partial, as Sumit alluded to. Will that put to bed the troubles and issues and negativity from the last year's game, and will that put NHL 16 on a solid footing moving forward in the Operation Sports community?
Yes, I think so for sure. I think, you know, OSers, they're looking for a reason to believe in this game. I think it won't be fully healed, but we will be a long way towards that if the game delivers on its promise. It works. You don't have problems with EASHL, you know, you just have a good, solid game that works. It's not going to be received well by critics if that is all it does. I mean, as Owen said, I mean, that is a 70, 75, something like that. I mean, it's not going to be received well. But by the community and its hardcore core fan base, there's going to be some wounds healed and things are going to be moved forward. The question is, does the game doing that and playing it relatively safe? I mean, this game was, as TJ said, you know, it was the best sports game franchise, possibly, arguably, in the last generation for a time. It's so far away from that right now, it's not even funny. Can it recapture that and become something great? Because I would argue that the NHL, given its inherent audience size and all that, it needs to have a game that good to survive, especially nowadays. So will it get there? I don't know, but this year it doesn't sound like it's going to get there as far as that good, but they have to nail the gameplay and they have to start getting some kind of a unique end because they really innovated last generation and they're going to have to do it again.
Good stuff. Well, as we're starting to see, you know, E3 is coming soon. Lots of information's been coming about the games. We've got developer interviews. In fact, we're talking with one of the Madden developers in just a few minutes. We're going to have a lot of that kind of stuff coming up. So we are entering that time of year when this is a, you know, the fall games are starting to come into focus. So it's definitely an exciting time. So I want to thank everybody for hopping on tonight. Owen Good, Sumit Sarkar, Chris Sanner, TJ Lowerman. Everybody have a great weekend, and we will talk to you again real soon. Barely yesterday. Oh, my life been shaking, wanting something, holding everything I had like it was broken. Give me something good. Well, all right, we are here. We are back. Welcome, everybody, back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm Rich Grisham, and we are here with a new guest. Seems like a lot of our guests tend to be multi-timers, but it's always fun to get somebody new on the show. And our new guest is Colby Launchbach. Colby is heading up the Madden CFM team. So this has got my name written all over it. I can't wait to get into this. Colby, welcome to the Press Row Podcast.
Hey, thanks for the warm welcome, and be gentle.
Oh, trust me, I will. So let's start with you and your role. What is your specific role as it relates to the connected franchise mode in Madden, and how long have you been with the Madden team and sort of working in this space?
So I'm going to go backwards a little bit. I've actually been with EA for a little over three and a half years at this point. And I have had various jobs each and every year. It's a little bit different. Most recently, last year, what I think people kind of knew I did was I headed up the Madden Ultimate Team efforts as well as the Madden NFL Mobile efforts. Then this year, they brought me back on to the full Madden title, so I'm actually overseeing all of the modes in Madden, so CFM, Madden Ultimate Team, etc., through production. And then, as you know, Rex Dixon is the gameplay creative director.
Wow, that's really interesting because, you know, a lot of the conversations when it comes to sports games these days are a combination of concerns about versus happiness with the fact that Ultimate Team and the various offshoots of Ultimate Team dominates sports games so much. And sort of the concern is, okay, well, if Ultimate Team dominates sports games so much, that's how these games make so much more of their revenue. Therefore, Ultimate Team will overtake everything. Therefore, the way that I, if I don't play Ultimate Team, play sports games is going to go away. That's concern. On the other hand, the conversations are like, man, thank goodness there's Ultimate Team because it's making so much money. It's keeping these games going, and it is basically paying for all of the other modes that I like to play, even though I don't play Ultimate Team. And then, of course, there's the Ultimate Team guys who just are totally into that mode. So it's interesting that you go from sort of focusing on Ultimate Team to all of the modes. So I'll ask you a few questions about that. But number one is the concern from some people that Ultimate Team is going to overtake sports games in general a legitimate concern?
I don't know that answering that question is really what you want me to answer, but the way I'd answer that is saying that Ultimate Team is definitely gaining popularity, but that doesn't mean that that's all we're investing in. In fact, this year, because there was really no creative director over all of the modes last year. It was sort of done patchwork. You know, there was like little individual leads, but no one had authority outside of their domain. So it was a little disjointed. So me in this role this year, when they gave me sort of the keys to the car, if you will, they said, hey, it's your budget. This is go spend it however you want. So I kind of quickly assessed where we were in each mode and what we needed to do and what our goals for the year were. And when I looked at that breakdown, I actually put a larger investment in terms of resources against CFM than any other mode for the Madden 16 cycle. So I don't think I would be concerned that MUD is going to be the only way to play at some point. I as somebody who grew up on Madden and, you know, World Series Baseball and NHL, when I was in, you know, junior high and high school, I would be upset personally if I couldn't play CFM anymore. So I don't think there should be any fear there.
You know, it's really interesting that you say that prior to now, there has not been sort of an overall creative director. What does it do for the game? How do you approach that now, sort of understanding that, okay, you've got all of these different ways to play the game under one sort of creative umbrella? What does that give you, and then how does that translate into the overall experience that we're going to see with Madden over the course of the next few years as you continue to continue to oversee all the different modes?
Okay, so there was a creative director 2 years ago, or three years ago. Mike Young was the overall sort of modes creative director.
Right.
Mike Young has been doing a bunch of other things for us these days, but we just were kind of 1 year in that different model. I think it was a little bit of a test to see if we could behave in that way and sort of didn't work as well as we would have liked, I don't think. And what that allows, so going forward, what it allows me to do is actually decide what each audience is really looking for. What is our CFM fan looking for? What does that person want to do? How do they want to experience Madden? What is our Ultimate Team fan looking for? How does he want to experience Madden? And try and give them those experiences that drive their behaviors and drive the things that they really want to do, with whether it be football or just sports in general, because a lot of these guys are multi-sport fans. But we need to tailor those experiences and really sort of, you don't want to have this homogenized, you know, Mutt is just like CFM, except you pay for it, which I think is this horrible attitude that a lot of the community has, that it's the same thing, it's the same mode, but people play it because you can build the Ultimate Team and whatever. Like, that's kind of an uncomfortable message from the community. I don't want that to be the message that we provide outwardly. The message that we provide outwardly, what we're driving toward is for Ultimate Team, we want that to be the most competitive way to play Madden. If you want to really be a competitor, if you want to get down and dirty, we want you to be able to do that in Ultimate Team, where it's got this sort of a rich experience around building up the different types of teams you can field, how you approach building your team, and then our sort of laddered leaderboard system inside of Ultimate Team seasons. For CFM, the goal there is really more about giving you the fantasy of being in the NFL, whether that's as a player, as a coach or an owner, but giving you that experience and really laying into that. I like to explain it as like, imagine each of these positions has a very important role in that world. And everyone has the fantasy. I had the fantasy growing up of being a professional athlete. Like, clearly that didn't work out. But when you have that fantasy, you have expectations. You have things that you wanted it to be like. And if we give you that fantasy and then let you experience it socially with your friends in like the online connected franchise mode, I think that's where we really pay off what that CFM user is looking for. Obviously, there's more than just that, but that's sort of the sort of driving force.
So how, you know, you're obviously taking the reins, the creative director of the game. Give me your sort of take on the state of the franchise, of the Madden franchise. What are, in your opinion, what are its biggest strengths, and where are the areas of weakness that you know that you want to address? And not necessarily just in Madden 16, but, you know, Madden overall.
Mm-hmm. So strengths, I think, as a core, Madden is a very, very fun game to play. You know, its roots are in that sort of head-to-head, on the couch, trash talk experience. I think we had huge successes there, and I still remember very fondly, you know, every year getting Madden kicked off my school year. And so I would probably lose the first few weeks to Madden and then slowly become a student again. But that was like this amazing experience for me. And I looked forward to every single release of the game. What was new? What were they going to add? What were they going to change? How much better was it going to be? And I think that we do a really good job of delivering year over year on some new, interesting, fun gameplay piece or mode piece that kind of strikes a fancy of a certain portion of the population. So I think that's one of the things Madden does really well. Where I see we have deficiencies is overall, sort of if you look at Madden holistically, it's a little disjointed. The game doesn't always remember everything it should with settings, or it's like some screens are very difficult to use, or certain things that you would think would be easy to find are very difficult to find. We have a lot of kind of leftovers in terms of little modes or little features that are kind of hidden in a nook or a cranny that haven't been touched for quite some time. And with a game like Madden that has the insane legacy that it has, some of this stuff's been developed by people who, A, are no longer at EA, but B, sometimes not even in the industry anymore. They've retired. So this stuff's been around a long time. Some of it hasn't been cared for in a long time, and we need to get much better at caring for all the things we're carrying around. And that takes time. That takes a lot of time. We've got, you know, it's taken us 27-ish years to get to where we are now. And with each year, you have to look at, okay, what's the next most important thing to fix, bring up to date, and make it easier to carry forward year over year, make it more data-driven, make it more sort of, internally we use the term players first, make it more for the player, make it easier, better, more fun, so that those guys, that you guys who are enjoying our game year over year see the effort we put in, because a lot of the effort we put in probably feels invisible because there's so much effort just to ship the game again with no bugs on the new disc. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, an annual cycle, we've talked about it, you know, on the show many times, but you know, with the annual cycle with a game as big as this is, how do you go about, you know, determining what to attack, what not to attack, what to leave, what to pull out? You know, what's your approach for how you see these modes and how you allocate your team?
That's a really in-depth question. Okay, so the first part was how do we kind of make a plan?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that we look at reviews, we look at consumer feedback, like our fans, what are they saying? We listen to the hardcore fans. We actually, because the sort of more casual and general audience doesn't feed back to us like the hardcore fans do, we actually have to go seek them out. And so we run multiple sessions with people who we send out email surveys, and to people who respond to, like, yes, I play Madden, I play this many games of Madden, this is the type of modes I play. So we go and we select, you know, different swaths of the population and bring them in for dedicated, you know, multi-day sessions to kind of pitch them potential areas, places we can go with the game, and sort of gauge their interest in kind of design brief or an explanation of what the game or what the mode or gameplay feature may be, and gauge interest and see, like, does the casual fan really, do they get really excited by this feature? Some of those things that we are pitching are things that we want to do, the directives we want to push, and we want to say, like, hey, we want TFM to be like this, or we want Mutt to be like that. But other things are driven by what we hear from the hardcore saying, I want TFM to be like this, or I want Mutt to be like that. And we kind of pitch both outwardly to the casual fan and see kind of what the biggest gain is going to be for us, and what the majority of the people want. And we try and add in those areas.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned reviews. I've had a lot of discussion about reviews. To me, sports game reviews are probably the least qualified of all reviews when you look at mainstream media, because with the exception of a few specific individuals, most reviews aren't done by people who are really into these games. And I, you know, to me, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in reviews of Madden or NBA 2K or, you know, FIFA or anything mm-hmm. like that, because unless it's somebody that I know has spent a lot of time playing this, you know, to me, it almost feels like a lot of these are just kind of kicked out after a few hours with some bullet points that are, you know, borrowed from other places. I mean, I could be wrong, but do you still put a lot of stock in reviews, or with the community that you have, you know, and the tools that you have through social media and these events you're talking about, are you able to get a lot more out of those than you may have been able to just a few years ago?
No, you're absolutely right. Reviews, for the most part, are some of them, not all of them. Some of them are pretty silly. You know, I've been in the industry a long, long time, and they've been silly for a long, long time. Yes, we do get more valuable feedback from our, you know, our Twitter and Facebook, and people email me directly. People email Rex directly. We like our comms team gives us feedback all the time. The Mutt community is very, very active in terms of giving feedback on Twitter. And so we probably have a much deeper connection with those guys. But as we move forward, we hope to get the same type of connection with our CFM fans and fans of any other, you know, modes or features that may come to fruition.
So what's a common theme that you hear from the interaction with your fans related to either CFM and or some of the other modes? Like, what's something that, you know, independently of each other, you kind of hear people say on a regular basis about the game that you've been able to work into your plans for building this year's game?
So, you know, a lot of the conversation is, I don't understand why you didn't just, and then fill in the blank with whatever it is they wanted.
Did you ever think about, about this a lot?
Yeah. And it's, you know, you mentioned earlier that you've talked about the cycle, and it's truly brutal. You know, you don't spend a year developing the game. You spend 6 months-ish developing the game. And then you spend the rest of that time figuring out what you're going to do and then fixing it all. And like, there's a 2 to 3 month window of launch and launch prep to get all the servers going, to get through first party. It is a massive effort to do this. You know, games that do this on a, you know, like a 3 or 5 year cycle, those pieces of time are almost irrelevant, but for us in the yearly cycle, those pieces of time are half of our year. So the amount of things we can do in one cycle versus what we would like to do in one cycle are never equal. But that said, you know, we try and there are trends. There are things that people say they want to do this, or they don't understand why that doesn't happen, or they, you know, defense is underpowered, or I hate rocket catching, or nano blitzing needs to get fixed. And, you know, I mentioned a bunch of exploits there, but then there's also like, I want more celebration animations, and I want to see unique personalities. And it's like, as we see trends change and things, people, as we deliver some of those things, the ask changes. So we have to be very receptive to what our fans are saying and try and deliver the majority of what we can to them in a timeline that makes sense for our development cycles.
You know, how do you balance between what people say that they want and between your vision? I mean, some of my favorite
That's really
experiences,
hard.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. If it were easy, they probably would have, you know, wouldn't need you. Right. Because like one of the things that I've discovered over the years is that things that I didn't realize I wanted certain experiences until I had them. Like, I never would have said, you know, I'd really love an immersive story, or I would really love a perspective like at the opening of Madden last year, right? I've always thought I wanted a television, but it turns out like video games give me a perspective that I can't get on television, and I can't, you know, get because I'm not a professional football player. Like, how do you sort of balance between what people are asking for versus what you feel strongly and passionately about that no one's asking for, but they don't ask for it because they don't even know that it could even be a thing, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So there's no, like, recipe for this. It's really, you have to be a student of the industry. I play many, 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 many games, and I don't play them like you might think. I just go home and sit down on the couch and kick my feet up and enjoy them. I do that as well, but I actually break them down. What is entertaining about this game? What is not? What can I use? What kind of? It's not a feature. You don't like want to go straight up and say like, I'm going to stealing cars from Grand Theft Auto, but you know what's fun about that? What's fun about the sandbox nature of a lot of the games that are out there right now? What's fun about like layering story and sandbox, and how do we bring that to Madden? What does that look like in Madden? And, you know, spoiler alert, we're talking about things that could come to fruition in CFM in the future. It's like making it more of a story-driven experience, making it a little bit more sandboxy, so you have more freedom to choose and make choices with what happens. You know, that may be a really obvious one that you that obviously know you want, but not everybody knows that that's what they want. And so, you know, I not to, you know, use an example of something I've already done, but you look back to my previous game. I was on MLB The Show for 9 years.
Oh, boy.
And,
love that game.
oh, thank you. And when we I pitched Road to the Show as this is something I think would be a lot of fun. It's like this single-player RPG experience. No sports game had done it like that yet. My boss was like, hey, that sounds interesting. Let's try it. And it was a pile of crap for the first year. Like the first year we shipped it, it just wasn't good. It wasn't hitting the mark. We didn't ship the whole feature. We shipped what we thought was kind of the min spec to get that feeling. It was fun, but you had to make it fun. It was that second and third and fourth year where we really got to the iteration. We really got to some of the depth of what we wanted that people started to realize and actually call us out for doing something innovative. But it was like they started mentioning it 3 years after we put it in. You know, we were kind of an underdog back then. And now that they've kind of been up near the top, it's definitely in the limelight. But nobody was going around asking for, I want the single player story mode experience, until we just gave it to them. And we gave it to them because I enjoy playing adventure games, and those single player things where I have a choose your own adventure story is fun. Why wouldn't it be fun in baseball or football or basketball to have that experience of what is it like to try and make a team, to try and become the starter, to try and become the best at their position? And that's kind of what we tried to deliver there. So you just have to kind of be a student of the industry and be willing to take chances.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about that move from The Show to Madden. How did that come about, right? Because, I mean, if you're making MLB The Show, that's obviously built in San Diego, and it's a very specific kind of a game, a specific kind of a culture and stuff. And Madden is a very different one. It's not only physically located in a very different part of the country, but it's also, you know, a different game, you know, as you mentioned. How did that come about, you sort of making the move from you know, MLB The Show to Madden?
Okay. There's like 40 ways to answer this. The easiest way is to say a recruiter from EA contacted me. And they said they were working out of EA Tiburon, and would I be interested in talking about a position? And normally I say, thank you, I'm happy where I am, you know, drive through. But I'd been on The Show for 9 years, you know, and I was thinking, maybe it is time for a change. It's time to do something new and mm-hmm. challenging, and maybe EA will have, I'll learn something from EA. You know, when you're with the same company for 16 and a half years, I grew up at Sony, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I only knew their way of building games and doing business. So I thought, you know, this would be an interesting challenge. And, you know, I was getting old, and at some point you're too old to learn. So I figured, why not? I'll follow up and just see what it is. And then when they let me know that it was the creative director from Madden, I was, oh, God, football is my absolute favorite sport. I grew up on Madden. How can I not talk to these guys?
Nice.
And my wife encouraged me to, you know, she knew I'm just a big nerd on the inside, and she thought that it would be a lot of fun and kind of like an exciting journey. You know, did a phone interview, did some on-site interviews, and clearly they offered me a position. So, I'm here. My wife, I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that, I did an insane thing with my wife's approval, but, I accepted this position. We moved across the country, started a new job, bought a new house, and had a baby in a 6-week window.
Yeah, so, that sounds about right. You know, not a lot of pressure, not a lot of change or anything like that.
No, and that was the craziest 6 weeks of my life to date.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, you know, it's funny.
So yeah, she was a trooper. We moved out here with her 30 weeks pregnant, so it's crazy.
Wow. You know, it's funny. It must be something going around, because back in 2007, I made a very significant career change myself. And within that same 6 months, same 6 weeks, we also had, you know, my son was born as well, too. So maybe it's just that whole thing, you know, like life changing, you know, bringing, a, you know, starting a family, you know, sort of thinking about what you can do. Maybe that's, there might be something to that sort of all happening at once, right?
Yeah, if you get it all at the same time, it's not so bad. If you spread it out, it feels like you're always under stress.
Yeah, exactly. Might as well just pack it all into one little window of time where you can just, you know, get over that hump.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was an insane time. And as I said, you know, as soon as I found out it was for the creative director of Pistol Show on Madden, it's not that there was no way I would turn the job down. It was that if the offer was right and, you know, my wife was cool moving to Florida, then I had to try and do it. Just, I love football, love Madden. So
it's all coming together for me now. Now I totally get it, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of MLB The Show, but I don't play Road to the Show anymore because it feels completely the same as it has for years. And now I realize that you haven't worked on it for 3 years. It completely makes sense. I totally get it.
I won't say that.
Do you go back and play the show like when it comes out? I mean, how does it feel to play a game? You know, I kind of imagine it's almost like, you know, the guitarist of a rock and roll band that leaves and then, you know, sees them playing in concert 3 years later. How is that to go back and play, you know, the newer versions of games that you used to be a part of, but you no longer have, you know, you're no longer playing a role in?
It's really weird. It's almost like somebody cheated on you. It's the weirdest feeling. I actually took a 1 year moratorium. I walked away completely. I did not play it for 1 year. And then I went back the next year, and it was like, what have they done with my X? Or what have they done with the Y? And I don't understand why they've done, what are they doing? You know, it's like, not that they're making wrong or bad decisions. They're just different than if I was there, I might have had a different opinion. It's just really interesting to see. Some I think I'm really impressed with. I love the quick count stuff they did. I thought that was awesome. But, yeah, it's very interesting to see how that has evolved and what they've done. You know, I still talk to some of those guys from time to time, and I still have great relationships with the team there. But yeah, the best I can give you is it really kind of feels a little like someone cheated on you.
See, I'm a player lock guy, not a quick counts guy. See, player lock to me, that's the game changer. I player lock as a batter for the first 6 or 7 innings, and then I play the whole rest of the game from like the 7th inning on, and all of a sudden I get 3 games in an hour. It's spectacular. But that's a discussion for another day. So what's different about making Madden than making MLB The Show?
The teams are totally different. The resources at your disposal are greater, but the challenges are also greater. You know, dealing with now I'm going to talk a little bit outside of modes, but gameplay for football is a much bigger challenge than gameplay for something like baseball. Baseball doesn't really have to deal with collisions. It doesn't really have to deal with 22 individuals running around and trying to look intelligent at the same time. They really only have to have a couple things going on at any given point in time, and the rest can be either scripted or very, very simplistic AI. So that's one of the biggest differences from a gameplay standpoint. Modes are similar. You're solving similar problems. You're delivering similar experiences. With the case of Madden, I actually, you know, I came here before CFM had launched, and you know, when Josh pitched back then was called Connected Careers Mode to me, I was like, wow, that is an amazing idea, bringing that single player and the sort of franchise coach experience together into the same world is a fantastic idea. And, you know, I was in love with it immediately. To this date, I still think it's kind of the most unique thing in the sports space. The problem is we haven't done a superb job of delivering those individual experiences.
So we can't talk in details yet, but next week we'll be able to get into the details. But what can you tell us right now about Connected Franchise Mode in particular? What, you know, for someone like me, and I'm a huge CFM fan, I'm playing right now as we speak. We're in the playoffs in year 4 of last year's, and we typically play our online franchise, which is about 14 to 15 people. We usually play it right up until the new Madden comes out. So, you know, I know we can't go into details yet, but what can you tell me, you know, either if it's thematically or specifically, you know, to any degree, what's coming with CFM this year, and why should I be excited, and why should the many people who do play CFM be excited?
Okay, I can only touch on a couple things. There's more to this than what I'm saying, but we delivered a pretty big story around just sort of the usability, the user experience of CFM, the onboarding experience, as well as the week over week, how do I manage my team? What effort does it take to actually go do things like depth chart changes or roster moves or anything like that? We've made a lot of that stuff easier, more slick, more straightforward. In the hopes that the guys who, like, you guys sound pretty hardcore, you figured out exactly how all those things work. But we have a lot of fans of CFM. There's literally millions of people who play CFM, and a large majority of them get stuck or get frustrated, you know, when we bring in those less hardcore groups of our consumers. They are confused, and they don't know how to do certain things. So we kind of focused on making it easier, making it better, while retaining all of the depth that, you know, has always been in Connected Franchise.
Go ahead, please go for it.
I was gonna say there's one more kind of thing I can talk about, and I can't get into the details, but we have done a pretty major overhaul to the scouting system. We've made the scouting system both easier, and there's added depth and challenge to it. So I think a lot of the hardcore fans will be very pleased with those changes. And I hope next week or whenever that is that we chat next, I hope that I can go into explicit detail and go through all the little changes with you and sort of explain to you why it's interesting and fun.
Good stuff.
And then lastly, we've added a bunch of stuff that sort of helps make managing online franchises, that sort of societal feature, the thing where you want to socially get together like you guys do with your, you know, 15 closest friends,
yep,
and you get in with a CFM together. We've made doing that easier and managing that league easier as well.
Good. I like the sound of all of those things because we use them, you know, we play two or three times a week every week for months and months and months. So anything and everything you can do to all those kind of things is welcome. You know, who cares about everybody else? It's welcome for me, right? I want this stuff, so it sounds good.
See, there you go. You're just another voice.
All right, well, Colby Launchbach, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, and we will get you back on the phone very soon as we can, to go into those details that people are just waiting with bated breath to hear about. So thank you, sir, for coming on, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Sure thing. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Medai at Pasta Padre. Polygon Submit Sarkar at Submit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at @_CatBot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve_OS. And of course, me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.